see on the show World's Dumbest on True TV, I did see some guys break into a church, and they didn't come out with a whole lot, but they did find some things. So they had them on their video camera in there, and I don't remember what they superficial wine, and maybe a little bit of stuff here and there. But, you know, they may have come out with some stuff, but some churches actually do have a lot of valuable things inside, and so it could be kind of lucrative if you wanted to become a church robber, I suppose. You know, the commentary that I saw on that show, even by people who had no religious affiliation specifically, was, you know, how low do you have to be to rob a church? You know, how would you like to be that person on Judgment Day, you know, when you're standing in front of God and you're guilty of robbing churches? That just seems like one of the worst things that a lot of people can imagine. I mean, they put it right up there with all the other, you know, what you call big sins. You just kind of imagine that as they come out, there's going to be a big lightning bolt and a thunderclap, and the person's just going to be struck down. That is just so far removed from our frame of reference about robbing a church that we can't even conceive of that. Even of a completely secular person, we can't imagine what would go through their head to make them say, yeah, I think I'll go rob the church. That sounds like a good idea. But Malachi talks about that a little bit. So I'd like to direct your attention to Malachi in chapter 3, verse 8. I'll have you read that. Somebody can read Malachi 3, 8 and 9. Pause there. We're very used to reading verse 10 in there. We referred to it a lot during this study on there, where God says, you know, test me. If you scripturally give, I will bless you immensely. We spend a lot of time thinking about that, but we don't always focus too much there on those verses before, verses 8 and 9 that we read, where God says that if you don't give scripturally, that you're robbing him. And that you're under a curse. You know, we don't read too much about curses in the Bible. And whenever we do, they're reserved for the pagans, they're reserved for people that are so far removed from God that it's not the kind of thing that we kind of think about in our modern terms today of being under a curse. Whenever we use the term today, what do you think about whenever you hear the word curse? Somebody is cursed or they're under a curse. Okay, bad luck. Some days it just doesn't pay to get out of bed. You know, some days it just seems like nothing goes right, doesn't it? And so some people will say, you know, I feel like I have a curse put on me or a hex or something like that. Because nothing goes right.
One of the things that the people of Israel had was the fact that they often didn't give God what they should give him. And because they didn't, God did put them under a curse. And really, you say, well, we're under a curse today. Because we don't give as we should, God is not going to bless us. That's the curse. You're not going to get the blessing that he has to give you. He already said, you know, he'll take care of you. Mm-hmm. Anything you need, he'll have it for you. But so many of us refuse to take the challenge of the dare that he put before. Mm-hmm. And this is where the curse comes in.
Yeah. How many of you in here just have so much money you just can't even find a use for it all? Yeah, I know you do, Cindy, but that's kind of pretty far removed from our frame of reference,
yeah.
Where you just have so much money that I can't even think of things to do with it. You know, a lot of times we dream about that, don't we? You know, you enter Publishers Clearing House, and Denise calls it our retirement plan. And we imagine sometimes, what would we do if we just came into all this money? You know, your long lost uncle dies and leaves you a fortune. You think you would win the sweepstakes, or you go out on a whim and buy a lottery ticket and you get it big. You just imagine this idea of, I just have so much money, I just don't even know how to spend it. It seems like a good problem to have for most of us. But it's the kind of thing that we don't really expect to have happen on here. But God is talking in here about the Israelites. And so we see what was going on with them. He had made some promises to them. Before they ever entered the promised land, God made them some promise. He says, if you'll go there and you'll serve me, you won't be conquered by your enemies. You're going to have the fields produce crops. You're going to have livestock. He says, I'm going to pour out blessings on you. All you got to do is serve me. That's all you got to do. But we see that didn't happen. And in fact, whenever Moses told them about these promises, you know, he was relating what God had told him. And God said, this is what I'm going to do if you follow me. Now, I know you're not going to. He says, but this is what would happen if you did. And this is what will happen during the times when you do follow me. But I know you're not going to. I can already tell you you're not going to. And so, you know, some bad things are going to happen too. So when you don't follow me, these are the things that are going to happen. And we read it, and we just say they are so stupid. If you just read the book of Judges, you read through there and you say, these people are so stupid. They'll follow God because they've got an enemy oppressing them. And God will raise up a judge, and he'll go and take vengeance on their enemies. And they'll make sacrifices to God, and God is so good. And it takes like one generation, and they're back where they were. That God is the farthest thing from their mind. They're serving other gods in there. And you just look at them and you say, how can they be so blind? How can they be so stupid? Don't they realize they're bringing God's wrath on them? That God is cursing them, cursing their crops, cursing their productivity. Everything about it just seems so obvious to us. But we just ask you, how many of you have more than you know what to do with today? None of us really do. And so then the follow-up question is, are you giving to God like you expect to do? Because if you're not, and you're not prospering like you want to, maybe there's a connection. Maybe we are no smarter. So it's something that we have to ponder today, that perhaps God isn't just speaking to them. He might be speaking to us today just as well as he was then. So, like for you to think about is, imagine, work with me here, imagine that you're going to give 10% of your income to God. And as we've said, that's kind of the bare minimum that the Bible ever mentions giving to God is 10%. Under the old law, they started with 10%. And they gave the firstborn of their flocks and the first fruits of their harvest, and they gave free will offerings. It came out to probably about a third of what they received they gave to God. And the New Testament, as we're so fond of saying, doesn't give us a percentage. But it doesn't appear there's ever any intent that our amount should drop. We've read that the New Covenant is much better than the Old Covenant, and everything about it is better than the Old Covenant. So what's better than giving 10%? It's not giving 5%. That's not better. Since God has given us things that are so much better than the old law, that really, we should be thinking in terms of how much more can we give than what they give.
Amen.
But we really don't a lot of times. We take that absence of a set percentage to mean God really doesn't care. We're going to give with a cheerful heart. There's a book mentioned in there. One guy said, look, I can only give this much with a cheerful heart. If I give more than that, it's not going to be with a cheerful heart, and that'd be unscriptural. So this is all I'm going to give. I don't think that's what God had in mind. I don't think that's the mindset that He's looking for when He says give with a cheerful heart, that limits you to only that $20 bill, because everything else you can give grudgingly. So since the New Covenant is so much better, but let's just start with 10%. So think about your annual income, or your monthly income, however easier for you to think about it. Mentally calculate that 10%. You're like my students at this point, you've got to pull out a calculator. I say, really, folks, 10%, you can't do that in your head. All right, but most of you went through the generation where you learned things in school. So I'm assuming that you can probably do 10% in your head.
Oh, yeah.
And figure out how much that is. And so then, do through the division, go ahead, run through the math. How much is that a week? So, a rhetorical question, don't expect a response out loud, but how much is that, and how does that compare to what you get? And do you see a relationship now between the fact that you don't have more than you know what to do with and the amount that you're giving? Are you doing exactly what God talked about in the book? Thoughts on that?
I've said before, but I think it's a good idea. When you go ahead and look at what you make, you can make $2,000 a month. That's $200. That's bare minimum.
Okay. That's $50 a week.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, there are those who think that's too much. $50 a week is not too much.
And that's based on 2,000 a month, of course, up to your own numbers.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, but according to the blessing God can give you, you overlook that and you're able to do it. And going and give that. I just think it's a good idea if you can give 10% or more. I think, in my case, I just don't believe it. I think it's good to give more. I want to give more to the Lord. Now, I don't make $2,000 a month, but, I would love to give, and I try to make sure I give more than that 10%. I like to give 15%. And then, with the next, there's so many people that don't want to, they want to hold on to it. They won't take God up on his dad. I double dog dare you.
that's kind of what God is doing.
Yeah.
So I'd like for you to imagine for a minute. We run the numbers. You know what that 10% number is. So that's kind of the baseline. You know, that should be the minimum that any Christian should consider giving. But if you're not giving that, myself here too. You know, when we run the numbers, sometimes it gets kind of scary.
Yeah.
It's like, do you need that much? That's how much I'd have to give to get up to 10%. Think about how would your life change if you gave that? What sacrifice would you have to make? What else would you have to not do, not spend money on in order to do that? Take just a thought, do a mental inventory, say, okay, what would I have to change if I were going to do as God said, try this scriptural giving thing, what would change in my life? And how bad would that be as compared to God's promise? Because He's really only given us two choices. He says, you can give scripturally, and I'm going to open up the floodgates of heaven and bless you. Not always, just financially. But I'm going to bless you. This includes during this life. This includes being content. Being not, you know, He doesn't say, I'm going to make you fabulously wealthy. But He wants to give you contentment. He wants to have you be satisfied with your life. And part of that comes from that mindset of giving. The fact that you know that you're giving scripturally, and that gives you the good feeling in and of itself. But God says, I'm going to provide for you. You're not going to suffer. You know, you're not going to be out in the street. You're not going to come to church naked. You're going to have clothes. You're going to have food. And I'm going to provide for you. He says that you will give scripturally. And contrast that with what He says in the book of Malachi. He says, if you don't give scripturally, you're under a curse. And so if you're not giving at least that 10%, if you're not giving maybe the more than that that was really intended in the new covenant, and you're not doing all that well, what do you have to do? Maybe you swung toward that curse side, rather than where God's willing to pour out His blessings. So that's what leads up to those verses that we're a lot more fond of quoting, where God says, test me in this and see if I won't pour out the floodgates of heaven and bless you in so many ways. So He just mentioned that curse right before that. So that's the part that we need to balance between the two. If we've tried doing it our way, the way that makes sense to us, then that hasn't really worked all that well. And does it make sense to perhaps try it the way that God suggests? Has there ever been another case in the Bible where we come out better by substituting our own wisdom for God's wisdom? I can't remember any other places where that's really worked better for me whenever I left things to my own devices instead of doing the way that God suggested. Especially when He specifically attached a curse on this side and a blessing on this side. So I encourage you to think about that. So now then imagine your life. You're starting to give scripturally. God has said He's going to pour out the storehouses of heaven. How might your life be different? Contrast that for a little bit and think, what could God do? What could God do in your life? Ponder that for just a moment. And then think about the fact that God's imagination and God's generosity is so much greater than what we can think or can imagine. Giving is such a touchy subject for people. Because we feel like, okay, the church keeps pressuring me to give more. We don't always know what they're doing with it, we don't know how they're spending it. And so we're so used to the idea of being cynical, of seeing televangelists on the TV, and they live in mansions with gold faucets and air-conditioned doghouses. And even though we know those are televangelists and that their motives aren't the same as real Christianity, somehow that gets buried down in our subconscious. And it just kind of seems like, maybe this is a racket. Maybe this is just Russ trying to get rich. We should give more so that we end up with this big budget. Well, what should we do with it? I think we should double the preacher's salary. That seems like the logical thing that we could do. And so somehow in the back of our mind, we feel like the church is being too demanding. God is being too demanding.
I heard an amen to that from Russ.
Oh, yeah.
We have noticed you still in South Carolina.
Keep on preaching.
I think that's really true. There's a country song talking about, putting extra five in the plate or something like that. It is that way. And we are blessed with the church, and we know how important it is. We're not hiding anything. Someone wants to look at where we spend our money. We can put that out and show them, hey, this is where it's going. And it also, something else, is with the church, it doesn't seem like there's always enough, And you know what? We're not putting the stores on, build a bigger storehouse and for more grain. We're supposed to spend that money on God's work. And as we receive it through faith, we can get more. But also, I think, that is something that we need to start with. We think of that lady who put all that she had in place. I don't know what those two or three were doing. I don't know if they were spending that money on whatever they were spending on, on their groceries or whatever. But it didn't matter to her. She wasn't getting it. She was getting it. And that's it. If you do, what's the church going to do? Yeah, that's important. If you get down to your church, what they're doing with the money, you need to check it. Whether you go with the right church. But also, we
are. That's the idea. It doesn't matter. I mean, there's not a whole lot that we read in the New Testament to give us confidence that all that money was being spent correctly. There's a lot of things that we read that tell us that perhaps the Pharisees and the Sadducees weren't necessarily doing everything exactly right. And so it's likely that there was some corruption. But as you said, it didn't matter because that's not who the widow was giving to.
Yeah. Well, I think, when you understand giving as it's not a money issue, it's an obedience issue, okay, and you're doing what God told you to do, then it goes along with everything else that God tells us to do, that God does not condition his commands to us on what somebody else is going to do. Okay, so what the church does with the money, it should not be a condition. Well, I'll give, I'll obey God if the church will do what I think they should be doing. Well, we don't, we shouldn't do that with anything that God has told us to do. I'll be a better husband if my wife will be a better wife, or I'll forgive people if they'll do, what they're supposed to be doing. Those are conditions that we, we want sometimes to put on it. But none of those are valid, and neither is putting conditions on our giving based on what somebody else will or won't do with that money. It's a matter of obedience. God said do it, so I do it. And it's irrelevant what other people are going to do.
Right. The IRS demands a certain amount of money from you, and it really doesn't matter whether you agree with what the government is doing with it or not. In any given year, you're going to look through the budget there, assuming there is a budget. And you're going to say, I wish my money, I could just designate it to go to this part and not to this part, because I agree with this and I don't agree with this. But that's not the way it works. And it's not the way that it works with God, because we're giving to God but not because God needs it. It's because we need it. The giving is for us. It's not for God. God can do anything he wants with however much there is, because the world belongs to him. It's not like we're giving our money anyway. It's already God's money. He's been generous enough to share it with us, but still is. So we're not deciding how much of our money to give to God. We're deciding how much of God's money that we're going to set aside to do his work. And with that attitude, none of it's ours. All of it is something that we should be doing that's going to benefit God's kingdom in some way, shape, or form. Part of that includes caring for our family, providing housing, food, shelter, transportation. All that is things that God approves of. Sometimes we kind of take it beyond that, and we may spend some little things God doesn't approve of. But the idea is it's all God's anyway. I used the example last time that whenever you are in a position of public service and you are spending taxpayer money, you don't decide what percentage you're going to spend on the taxpayers. You don't decide, okay, this amount I'm going to keep for myself. And I'm going to spend 10% of it on the taxpayers. It's all the taxpayers' money, and it's all 100% supposed to be used for those purposes. None of it just is supposed to be going into our pocket, except for the pay that we've been promised. But that money within our control is designated for a certain purpose. So many times we think of it as, this is mine. I'm going to be willing to maybe generously share this little part with God, the little stuff. It's mine, and I'm going to jealously guard it. Whenever we start with that attitude, it's not going to be possible for us to spend it really good.
Like
God blesses you. By giving generously, that's one of the ways that he opens up the storehouse, is you can legally take that off your taxes, which means you have more available, which means you have more you can contribute. So you have no reason to feel guilty about deducting it from your income tax. Look at that as another one of God's blessings. So there's certainly no reason to feel guilty about that. That's a perfectly legal thing to do. And it's what God expects you to do. I mean, otherwise, you're not being a good steward. If you deliberately do things that sabotage your income, whether it's throwing it away on things of this world, or not taking advantage of perfectly legal opportunities for God to bless you more, you're not being a good steward. This way you can do that, and then God provides you back more funds available to continue to do things. Kind of a gift that keeps on giving. So God expects you to do it. He doesn't approve of it. You would probably be disappointed in you if you didn't do those things, because you're shortchanging. And in the long run, yes, because that means you can do fewer things than God is.
I just recall that in the church, I think it was in Japan, the member of the church went to the treasury and said, our treasury's too big. Not all our churches do that. But we didn't have a whole lot of bills at that time. And people were able to give a lot more because it caused a little allowance to see what they had. I noticed them in the church and say, okay, so now we're going to suspend giving because you got more than what you need.
Right. It means now we can do more good things.
And so you actively went out and looked for more things to do.
Yeah, what's an opportunity that we have to do God's work since we have some extra money?
But I contrast that with the church that we went to for a little while, where their big thing was, I think we'll like going here because we'll grow careful with what we're doing, but they wouldn't spend on anything that they felt was not specifically spelled out in Scripture. And I remember the conversation we had with the minister about that. I'd rather apologize for having attempted to do something that I could and not doing something than I could have because I was being
recently when we had the need, when the air conditioning went out up here, it made me think of this next passage. Turn to the book of Haggai, chapter 1. There's something that kind of tells me in here, and something that made me feel guilty, I guess, whenever we had a need. Turn to Haggai, chapter 1, starting in verse 2. Reading down through verse 6.
Thus speaks the Lord of hosts, saying, this people says, the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then the word of the Lord came by Haggai, the prophet, saying, is it time for you yourself to dwell in your panel houses and this temple to lie in ruins? Now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you do not have enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe yourself, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes.
It says there was a need to rebuild the temple. This is after the exile, whenever the Babylonians had come in and destroyed it. And he says, you know, we have a need to build the temple. And he says, you've come back from exile, and you're living in nice houses, but you haven't rebuilt the temple. And so it made me think, you know, hey, we're all living in our own houses. It seems kind of a shame that there's not enough money here to repair our church building. And that's just an example. I'm sure we could live without air conditioning if we had to. From the church many years, many of us in our early years, church building without air conditioning. But it makes a point of if we go home to comfortable houses, but we leave the Lord's work, whatever it is, undone, then in the next passages, he says, you know, have you noticed you planted much, but you harvested little? You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You put on clothes, but you're not warm. You earn wages, only to put them in a purse of holes. You know, that's how we feel a lot of times. No matter how much money we make, it's never enough. There's always needs. We always feel like, in fact, I made the comment one time, it seems like every time we get a little bit of extra money, there's an expense that we didn't expect. Denise said, no, it's just that right before we have an expense, God gives us extra money. And I said, okay, that's a much better way of thinking about it. But still, it seems like, you know, so many times, you just feel like I'm never getting ahead. There's always something else and something else. You know, I'm doing okay, but the car breaks down. You know, it always feels that way. And God says, you know, maybe there's a reason. He says, maybe it's because you haven't been doing what you're saying. don't feel like you can afford to give. You have that back. Just like I was doing. Maybe you've got it back. Maybe it's because you're not giving that you never have.
Well, and also, I don't believe you ever promised us that we get ahead. The promises that we have will be used.
That's true. So that's our thought, is we need to get ahead and we need to build up a nest egg and we need to be able to care for ourselves and be a millionaire when we retire. And there's all kind of pressures that we put on ourselves. Yes?
I'm not sure we save up our money to go to do it.
Guy, he says, you know, why is it that you've selfishly taken care of your own needs and you haven't taken care of mine? And so he says, that's why you don't have any.
I know we're running out of time. I just want to say, they take a little bit for me personally to learn to give the right way. But also, I'm looking
looking for reasons. I don't have to look for the reasons. I want to have reasons and feel better. But to give more to the Lord. I want to be able to give more to Him. Because, I mean, you know, my wife and I were talking about it. And she said, you made $1 million in our working years. I said, I'm sure we have. That doesn't go to the knee. But we certainly had good jobs and were pretty, pretty fortunate. But everybody in here. Look for reasons to give more. Because God will allow you to afford it. He dares you. He dares us all in here. I wish more of our members were here to give these lessons. But unfortunately, you know, we do the teach to the choir, but I'm thankful. I'm thankful for what God does and I just was thankful that He showed me what. And His way always there.
My dad told me one time, so I'm working on my second million. He said, yeah, I gave up on the
first. He also told you that not to wait for the bank account to die, because I want somebody to charge my money.
That's true. but a lot of this has to do with our thought. You know, they do say that somebody without a college degree will make somewhere between $1 and $1.5 million over their lifetime. If you have a college degree, about $2 to $2.5 million over your lifetime. Where has your million gone? What do you have to show for it? And I don't mean in your bank account. What do you have to show for it spiritually for that money? How much of that has gone directly to the church? How many of it have you given to God in the ways, whatever ways that you can give it to them, whether it's being generous out of your personal funds with other people? How much of that has been God's in your mind? Because it is all God's.
Yeah, one of the things we have to be careful when we try to get ahead, whatever getting ahead is, or to gain money, is that then it's much more difficult to give sacrificially. And God wants you to give sacrificially. He wants you to give up something. He doesn't want you to give out the excess. He wants you to give up something for Him. Say, hey, you're worth more than this is worth to me. And we have a lot of things we think are worth more than us. But He wants us to put Him first.
This isn't all bad news for lots of reasons. When the church had a need, the congregation came through. And they contributed more than what was needed to prepare the air condition. So I know that the people in the congregation do have generous impulses toward giving. And many people are giving sacrificially in the congregation. But we just want to always keep in mind what God expects of us. It's not to profit the church, it's for ourselves, so that we learn to put money in the right perspective in our lives, to help us remember where it came from. Giving back to God, this is, in essence, it's all now a free will offering, a love offering. You want to consider it that.
Give us the courage to do.